Welcome to Chronic Combat Conversations, a live look at our best bets, picks, and predictions for UFC 261, Usman vs. Masvidal 2, with your hosts, TB Scouting MMA and...
The MMA Guru, here for an awesome pay-per-view with the one and only Tom Feely, contributor and writer to Sure Dog. Tom?
Hey, thanks for having me. Just I've been talking to you guys and just like what you bring and been some good chopping it up. So just looking to continue that. So let's get to the fights.
Awesome.
That's that card.
Yeah.
Let's get right to them.
So this is going to be a great pay-per-view, as Guru is alluding to. Maybe just give us a quick rundown here of what you're seeing.
Really no time to waste with three title fights on the docket here. The welterweight champion, Kamaru Usman, undefeated in the UFC, putting his title on the line once again after only putting it on the line about, 70 days ago against Gilbert Burns, this time against game-bred Jorge Masvidal. The other two fights, Zhang Weili taking on Rose Namajunas for the strawweight title, and Valentina Shevchenko making yet another defense of her flyweight title against Jessica Andrade in her second fight in the weight division. I cannot wait to get into these.
Yeah, so why waste any time? We're going to start at the bottom of the card. And just as a quick note, we do have a few fighters making their debut coming over from the Shanghai Performance Institute. And it's very exciting. But at the same time, we are lacking a lot of, high-level tape on some of these fighters. That doesn't mean that we won't have a little degenerate play or maybe a little lean for you if you're looking for a play. But for these first few fights, we'll give you a quick rundown. But I would say for the most part, I think we can all agree, you don't want to go heavy on these.
I was going to say I think it's fairly obvious. One of the main reasons that they put these fighters on is the notoriety and the eyes that Weili Zhang is going to bring to the card. So when you're pairing that up, in terms of the main event, putting these fighters on the prelims makes perfect sense.
Leading us off, Liang Na, making her UFC debut, like we said, from this is our first of the debutantes from the Shanghai Performance Institute versus Ariane Carnelossi, who, showed a little something in her debut against Angela Hill. I think this could end up being a little bit of a tough fight, and whoever kind of gets their pace here, might dictate it in the strawweight division. And as of right now, we have the line at minus 200 for Carnelossi and plus 168 for Liang making her debut. Any thoughts here from you guys?
So I was able to look up some film on some of these the three new Chinese fighters. For tape study hack, one way to find a lot of stuff is to search for their names in the Chinese characters. That also helps with Russian fighters. So I was able to find some stuff on Na. She did have a fight in Bellator against Juliana Velasquez, where she mostly got outclassed. Otherwise, unlike some of the other fighters, where I was able to find a few things, but they're relatively recent. There was a decent amount of stuff out there on Na, but nothing really past 2018. Pretty much she's just a straight get taken down, go for arm bars, triangle chokes, stuff like that. Carnelossi is just more or less a tank, kind of a less technical Jessica Andrade.
She is jacked.
Yeah.
And just the one thing, Angela Hill outclassed her, but she had at least show hey, she will get punched in the face and she will just keep coming.
She belongs.
Durable. Yeah. So I think she's probably just going to grind this out against Na. A submission reliant fighter is a really low percentage chance. And as I'll get into with the two guys, I'll just talk about Chinese MMA trying to translate as a whole. It's come a long ways away for if you guys watch Tough China in 2014, it is not good at all. So the fact that they're able to, crank out some pretty decent athletes from and it's pretty decent fighters from the Chinese scene is super impressive from where it was 6-7 years ago. But I put China in the same category as I put Australia, Mexico, some of these other circuits where, some good fighters come out of there, but my big question is basically there are fighters who like can get by with basically just being able to do a little bit of wrestling, a little bit of grappling. So that's the part where I'm not sure if that's going to translate to UFC level.
Right. So part of what you touched on that I found kind of interesting and something that I saw in the wiki capping was that what's her face? Obviously Lang, who's coming from China, it doesn't really has not fought a high level of competition. And while she has three straight first round finishes, we alluded to that Carnalossi is a tank.
Yeah.
So I don't necessarily see Liang getting an early finish. And then when you go the other way, you know, I'm not really sure where Carnalossi would get a finish. You know, she's while she gets the KOs, it doesn't look like they're via crazy knockout power. It seems to come over volume.
Yep.
So that leads me, just based on what I'm seeing price wise, I just thought it was interesting, over 2.5 plus 150. So they're not thinking that this fight goes the distance, and I'm not really sure why. I mean, you can get the fight to start round three minus 112.
Yeah.
And I guess like Mr. Feely was talking about, Carmelossi probably grinding it out. If you do like that thought, Carmelossi by decision plus 270. That seems so like that sounds so greasy. That's crazy to me.
I would say the thing is, like, not at least in my mind, is so unproven that, like, hey, Carnalossi could just get that, you know, win by attrition. Even though I'm picking Carnalossi to win, I wouldn't bet her side of thing. The thing that stuck out to me was by a submission at plus 500 as just a, if Na is winning this fight, it is by submission, and Carnalossi is going to keep locking up with her. And it's like, do I trust Na to tap her out? No, but if she wins, like, if you have any steam on Na, it better be by submission. That's the way she wins it.
I love a good submission prop.
Yeah. Like, it's like the fight that, like, it didn't happen 1 or 2 weeks ago, the Erin Blanchfield, Norma Dumont thing, it was like where Blanchfield, like, was an underdog, but like the odds for her by submission were crazy. And it was just like,
We talked about that here.
That's why I brought it up, because it's like, hey, if she wins this fight, it's going to be by submission. So it's like,
exactly.
So I would still probably like avoid, but you know, if you want to put a little bit on it, like, there are much worse plays on this entire card than just saying, hey, nah, you know, maybe with the UFC, the PI training and everything like that, maybe she looks better. You know, again, I haven't seen her fight in like 3 years, so maybe she's actually rounded things out a bit. And like, it's not like Carnalossi's any sort of world beater. So it's like, hey, you know, throw it down, maybe hope that.
This is certainly the lower level of MMA. So that's why we're, unless TV has anything else to add, we're ready to move right along.
Yeah, I'm ready to move along because I'm just going to stay away. And to our next fight here. So now if you read this in straight American terms, it's Aori Kilang, but it's Aori Shilang when you want to pronounce it correctly. So Shilang is going to, and it's all combined into one name. So it's Aori Shilang. And he's going to be fighting Dana White Contender Series opponent, making his debut, Jeff Molina. So, you know, right here, once again, we don't have a lot of high-level tape for both of these guys, although I will say watching back Molina's, you know, performance on Contender Series, very exciting. So we have a flyweight fight, and when you look at the line, we have that Molina is at minus 108, and Shilang is also at minus 108. So pick a side, find your side, and throw your life savings on it, right? No. Once again, I'm staying away from this fight.
I'm staying away from this fight. If I had to pick, I do lean Molina. I lean Molina because he trains with James Krause. I think that a couple of these, at least one of these Chinese prospects is not going to win, right? There's no way they go 3-0. So I think that this is a pretty fair chance for Molina to get his victory here and spoil that debut. Realistically, either fighter by decision is probably the prop bet if you have to bet it, and you can get them pretty juicy. So that's it.
Yeah, I'd stay away entirely. Just because Aori Shilang, and I'm sorry, I butchered that probably.
That's fine.
Yeah, just there's very little out there on him. Basically, like one entire fight I was able to find on a video that played for me pretty choppy. So it was hard to kind of get an idea of, okay, parts of this look good, but how's his overall game? And also, like on tape that isn't high quality, it's hard to tell how much of an athlete he's gonna how much of that translates. Molina, I like. I think he's like at least as of right now, still pretty raw, more exciting than good. So I mean, if Arishi Lang's more of an athlete, it's like, okay, I could see him, knocking him out or tapping now, so I wouldn't even touch the decision part of things. But I did pick Molina basically based off of just pace and,
Yeah.
basically being a little bit more proven, even though another guy really is. So
No,
total avoid.
that's
Yeah, listen,
completely fair.
during this fight, I'll be enjoying a little bit of extra chronic. I'll be sipping a little bit extra of that Jameson.
You got to get lubed up for the rest.
I'll be making sure my bets are straight for the rest of the evening. I will not be betting this fight.
And that's a good idea. And right on to our next one. Once again, we're talking another UFC debutant.
Another fight I won't be betting.
Yeah, and we have Rodrigo Cazula Vargas of infamy from his last fight against Brock Weaver, which we'll get into. But and then facing Rong Zhu, making his UFC debut. And I found it a little interesting. All three of his career losses were by submission. So we look at this fight coming in the lightweight division. So this is our heaviest one so far. And the odds, we got Rong Zhu at -270, making his debut against Vargas at +220.
Yeah, I mean, just your face. I mean, your face puts me on Vargas, and that's the whole point. It's like, first off, again, I'm not betting anything. But if you were to bet it, Wrong has not done anything right to make you feel like you should put any money on him. That's bad, right? That's a bad.
That was
Yeah,
fun.
that was pretty bad.
Sorry, dude. Listen, he's extremely talented. I'm extremely excited to see him. The dude has 20 pro fights. He's only 21 years old. The sky is the limit for this kid. But I'm not paying top dollar to, I'm not putting him in a parlay. I'm not playing him. Maybe the over 1.5, just because, again, I think Vargas is, that, tough Mexican warrior. And again, Wrong is so young that how is he going to get that early finish? I don't know. Again, Vargas to me looks like a perfect guy to ruin your parlay. Like Wrong is a shit in the apple pie kind of guy. Is he just too juicy? It's the price is too high.
I would not touch this basically for all the reasons said. Vargas is kind of the guy I was talking about where, hey, he was on a circuit that didn't have a lot of good wrestlers, and he was the one guy who could do some wrestling. And that's basically like, and we saw like in his UFC debut, like not even at that high level, against Weaver. Obviously got himself disqualified, but even then he was starting to get tired doing that game. So, Rong Ju, is the thing where I don't know how good his wrestling is, so it's like, okay, Vargas could just be able to take him down. Like Rong Zhu is a good like wrestler for the Chinese scene. I have no idea how that goes against Vargas. And so, but on the other hand, I can't really trust Vargas because Vargas both gets tired and cannot get himself
Isn't he
knocked
old
down.
as shit too?
Yeah, he's
He's
35.
definitely a veteran.
He's
Yeah.
35, and
So
Rong Zhu is 21.
I did look at Rong Zhu by knockout, but like I think those odds were only like plus one. It was either like plus or minus 120. I was like, okay, that's totally not worth it, even then. Yeah, so you get something spicy on that. It's like, okay, like of the three debuting Chinese prospects, Rong Zhu is the best. I think the best of the three, pretty clearly. But also, like he's in lightweight, which is a much cheaper division. So it's like I do have some questions, and this could be something where, like, hey, if he comes out, stuffs the first takedown, knocks a guy out, it's like, okay, now I'm gonna start getting excited because he's
Right.
at least
No,
going for a
exactly.
fight.
This, so I think you just hit the nail on the head. This is a fight to learn from. This is you take out your notepad and you take notes so next time you have a much better understanding of what we're
Yeah,
looking
like
at.
if he was a narrow favorite, it might be worth throwing something, but at what he's on, it's
Yeah.
like there's just no value here.
And like I talked about, loving a submission prop. So the one thing that kind of stood out to me when Vargas decides to wrestle against Weaver, here he is leaving his neck just all the way available. So I was like, oh man, if anything, Rong Zhu by submission plus 500. But it's like, am I just gonna bet submission on every fight on this card? I gotta chill out probably. So Yeah, so let's get right along to the next one. And we actually have UFC tape on both of these fighters. So maybe, you know, a little bit more of a lean here. We got Danah Bacurel versus Kevin Natividad. You know, Bacurel has a few fights in the UFC now too, and Natividad has one. So we have a little bit of a sample size here. This fight is going to be in the bantamweight division. And when we look at the odds, you know, it actually is a little bit interesting because Bacurel is minus 196. And Natividad plus 164. I know knockouts stay in people's minds, a little bit of recency bias. Bacurel had a really good performance, actually getting a knockout of his own over Guido Canetti back in March of 2020. So he did have a little bit of a disappointing performance we rewatched against Alatang He Lee. And he really showed that although he can bring the volume, you know, I wasn't really sure that I loved like his looping punches or his killer instinct. And you know, I'm not sure that he's not going to have that big of a size advantage like he's used to in this fight. And I think Natividad is going to be a little bit willing to mix it up here.
I think in a card that is quite chalky, honestly, Natividad isn't the worst dog that you're going to find. I think he could be live here. I don't know how Natividad is going to handle that uppercut loss. And he did make a good account of himself in that fight. Don't get me wrong. He showed good takedown defense, you know, decent striking. I mean, what he doesn't have in necessarily in athleticism, he makes up for in toughness and heart. And as you've seen earlier in his career, he got knocked out and then followed that up with a, you know, 5-fight win streak that brought him to the UFC. But I am very curious to see how he's going to look here. You know, Bacurel has seems a little tentative. He's strong, has decent takedown defense, good footwork and feints, but he seems so hittable. And Canetti was gassed out after like 2 minutes, and he just buckled over. So we know that Natividad will not be as easy of a fight for Bacurel. And if I said that the last fight had a chance to be an apple pie shitter, this fight is the biggest apple pie shitter possibly on the card. How can you trust Bacurel at such a high money? Like, he hasn't done anything. He's 1-1 in the UFC. It is crazy. And I don't see the advantage being as high. I think this fight is really, I don't know, more 55-45, like much more closer to a coin flip.
I think I'm a bit higher on Bacurel than you guys, but like I am picking him, but it's like, again, not really super confident, especially at those odds. I mean, the good thing is like, I kind of know this is a pretty easy fight to know what's going to look like is that they're both going to throw down. I think Bacurel is going to throw a higher volume. Natividad, I would say might have a little bit of like a form and power advantage, but also he's the guy who's been knocked out before. So basically like another thing I liked on the early prelims were like a nah by submission before. And then also, this fight ending within the distance at about even money. Cause I just figure, okay, either
I have that written down as well. Fight to go the distance.
Either like Bacurel by just volume and okay, just, you know, wins the war of attrition or Natividad kind of, you know, hits Bacurel with a clean shot. And I believe that would be like the first knockout of Bacurel's career. Like, Bacurel getting, you know, I believe hasn't been knocked out before, but also like, you know, given the level of competition, it's like, okay, it wouldn't really surprise me if, you know, he doesn't strike me as like, oh my God, you know, like he's proven his durability. No,
that's a good reason.
Yeah, but he also, yeah. I do remember we were watching back that Alatang He Lee fight with Bacurel and his eye got messed up. Pretty swollen. Yeah. So he did hold up well to a lot of those strikes. Not that, you know, Alatang is really the biggest hitter, but, you know, we did see him, you know, get wobbled a little bit, but still show that he can make it through. But you're right. It's tough to predict when someone's first knockout is going to come, but that kind of covers both sides. And I think if something comes, it might be within the distance. And Natividad's also got the brown belt in BJJ. So it's not like he couldn't take advantage of the blue belt for Bacurel if he gets it there. You know, Bacurel says his favorite grappling technique is all the chokes and his favorite striking technique is all the spinning kicks, but I don't see him doing any of that. and that's fine. But I think, yeah, you actually had a little, a pretty decent read there, Philly. I like that. I might end up making that a small play instead of going with the dog, because you're right. There probably is a pathway for both guys.
Yeah.
All right, so let's get on to the next fight here. We have one where, once again, not too much tape on one of the sides, at least as far as UFC tape goes. And the other one, it was pretty unorthodox, the tape that we have on Connolly. So, in this fight, we're going to be in the featherweight division. And Pat Sabatini going to be facing Tristan Connolly. Sabatini making his debut, coming from Cage Fury. Very impressive grappler. And Connolly, showed in his own right that he's got some wrestling chops when he was facing Pereira, because we've seen him, have some good wrestling before. So the line here, Sabatini opened up as a slight dog. I don't know where you could have found that. Here, now we're looking at minus 225 for Sabatini and plus 188 for Connolly. Man, that money line became quickly unplayable as everyone kind of realized that, Sabatini's a really good prospect. But I think I found my favorite sub prop so far, because if you look at the career wins and losses, Sabatini, 10 submissions, one knockout, two decisions. And Connolly, he does have a loss by knockout, by submission, and four decisions. So I don't think it's going to be easy to get the submission. But as far as, probabilities, how a guy does his stuff, Sabatini by submission is plus 340, and that's probably what he's going to be trying to get here. So I'm willing to take not a gigantic shot here, but this is probably my first official prop play for the card.
I think it's a hell of a stab. I think it's a good stab. Sabatini has, 10 submission wins on his record. So that's absolutely the way he's going to want to get it done. I think getting it at plus 340 is like criminal. It's great. I think that's a great line. The problem is as you've kind of mentioned, Tristan Connolly is quite tough. He's a good grappler himself. He had a shoulder injury and he had a knee bar loss. And a knee bar is kind of obscure. I think the more likely outcome could be Sabatini by decision, plus 125. And but like I said, I don't hate the the play. I feel like every fight is over, is decision, is chalk. It's tough. This is a weird card.
This one, just because, so Sabatini, for the reason you guys covered, like, solid prospect, I like a submission game and everything, but this is like a total avoid for me, just because Connolly is like, the big thing about Connolly, like, Western Canada is one of the hardest places, just the promotions there, to find tape on, and going into the Pereira fight, like, there's basically like no decent film on Connolly, just all highlights. So he had to go over like mediocre record, a guy fighting up a weight class, like he's probably got his head kicked off. And it's, then you have the Pereira fight, which, okay, like, I don't really know what to do with that, because he's such, like, Pereira's such a weird opponent. And it's like Connolly still got tired, but Pereira got more tired because he was, doing his Pereira shit. And now it's okay. This is, so that fight was, so Connolly's a career lightweight who fought up at welterweight in his UFC debut. And now, like, a year and a half later, after a car accident, is fighting at featherweight.
Right. I wanted to touch on that. Exactly.
Yeah. So it's like, okay. So I look at, and two, he's a pretty like big guy. So it's like, okay, if he's a straight ahead wrestler, he could just overpower Sabatini. But at the same time, it's like, okay, what kind of shape is he in? And again, I go back to like, even in the Pereira fight, he got really tired. So at featherweight, is he stronger and does that help his wrestling? Or is it just, okay, he's just killing himself to make that weight cut and he's going to even have the worthless of a gas tank and lose? And it's like, that's my huge question on that, Agreed. As far as...
It was always the intangibles of Connolly that made him good. The scrappiness, the heart, those kinds of things. And the, even the cardio at times where he was able to outlast Pereira and win the fight. Like you said, an injury from a car accident a year and a half older.
Is he actually going to
be able to perform at his best anymore? Really, realistically, as a prospect, quote unquote, he's at the tail end, right?
Yeah, if that. Yeah, because again, I have no idea. It's like, okay, all that stuff works against Pereira, but how does it work two weight classes out against, like,
For Sabatini to gas out is not going to be an option.
But, if this weight cut, it's like, hey, Connolly's weight cut goes really well, and hey, like, he's okay with the car, and it's like, and he's like the larger, more powerful guy. It's like, hey, if he just out-wrestles, Sabatini for three rounds.
Not only was I just so impressed with with Sabatini's high level of jiu-jitsu, just how high-paced he was, and just how much, how good his takedowns were, and of course how good his jiu-jitsu was. The one thing that I did not like about his game was that he was too willing to pull guard and accept, you know, takedowns, but that's kind of to be expected when you're rolling for ankle locks and knee bars from the bottom.
So I think ultimately, if I had to pick a side here, you know, not thinking about, you know, the money line or whatever, yeah, I would probably go with Sabatini. You know, it's his actual weight class and a lot of unknowns about Connolly. But yeah, as far as a play, I'm going to keep it small, go for a more of a long shot prop. I'll take the Sabatini plus 40 sub myself.
Yeah, and Feely, you passed, right?
Totally. I've got so many questions about Connolly, and then with a new weight class and also being a wrestler cutting down a weight, that can go either way. I'm just total avoid.
Yeah, it could probably be
my biggest
could be
avoid on the card.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's get down to fair a enough fight where we have a lot to dig into. We got Carl Robertson, Baby K, facing Brendan Allen here, middleweight fight. And, you know, this fight is actually going to be pretty competitive, you know, based on what I'm seeing here on tape and also based off of the line. We have Brendan Allen at minus 158 and Robertson, you know, coming in the underdog at plus 134. I think the biggest question of this fight is where does it play out? Because I think it's kind of obvious from what we've seen, at least, you know, who could control, you know, Robertson will be in the stand-up, Allen might be in the grappling. I'm just curious where we do end up.
I think that's a great question, and I think it is the one, if you can answer it, it will ultimately decide who wins this fight. Robertson, the former Glory kickboxer, obviously has the advantage on the feet. Brendan Allen, former wrestling background, really enjoys his wrestling and grappling, you know? So the problem I've seen with Allen and his game is, especially like you see it in the Strickland fight, he kind of fell in love with his hands. And he pays dearly for it. You know, a 39% striking defense is quite abysmal. So if he can take Carl Robertson down and lay Carl on his back, then for sure. But something I believe you pointed out to me, TB, is that Allen, the supposed grappler, only goes for, what is it, like two takedowns or so every 15 minutes?
He goes for a little over three and lands 1.17.
Okay, that was it. It was the landing. So he's going for more, but he's landing about half of them.
Yeah, so.
Which is fine, but it's not necessarily a lot when that's supposedly your bread and butter.
So I'm curious, Feely, where do you end up on this?
I am huge on Allen here. So Robertson, like, again, good striker, but the thing is, like, so his best performance, I would say, at least, like, his best performances in the UFC so far have come to Jack Marshman and Roman Kapalov, guys who either, in Marshman's case, couldn't challenge him physically, or against Kapalov, who was, like, fine with a range, you know, kickboxing contest. And just Robertson, whenever someone wants to, like, you know, he's a little bit of an underrated grappling game, but whenever someone wants to pressure him, it just, things really go south. And I think you saw that in the Vettori fight, where Vettori comes in, Robertson decides the one who initiates the wrestling, and then just things go south. So my big question here is, like, if Brendan Allen fights anything like he did before the Strickland fight or going into the Strickland fight, then I think easy win for him. He'll come and apply pressure either with his hands or trying to go for takedowns. I think Roberson's going to meet him with the takedowns and then just wind up losing, you know, the fight as a result, and maybe even getting tapped out. Or actually, probably even getting tapped out with how aggressive Allen is. My main question is basically, okay, the complete shit kicking that Allen took against Strickland, just does that affect him mentally? Is that the thing where he just says, like, okay, I need to tamp down this aggression a little bit? Just because looking through his record, it's like, you know, his losses just look like fights where it's like, okay, he just did these 50-50 scrambles and, like, you know, he just wound up not getting the win at the end. This is like the first time where it's like, all right, someone just, like, beat the piss out of him and said, okay, like, you have hit the wall, this approach is not going to work at alert level and stuff like that. So if he comes out passive, I think that's going to play totally into Robertson's hands, literally. Just, you know, Robertson's going to be able to kickbox with him. But I think, like, I'm pretty big on Allen just at a straight money line, around like -155, like you said. Because just I think if he gets this to the ground, there's, you know, there's enough variability where the sub odds weren't attractive enough for me. And then also, like, to say, okay, Allen could win via ground and pound, or could just, you know, keep winning grappling exchanges for decision. So I'm just big at those odds on Allen in general.
TB?
That makes a lot of sense. So for me, I actually found myself leaning the other way. So I'm just it was interesting to me to go through, you know, the statistics you can't spend too much time looking at. But Robertson, like you said, he does initiate some grappling. Actually averages one takedown per 15 and at 20% better accuracy than Allen. But like we talked about, the level of competition and the athleticism advantages he had, those aren't going to be as present in this fight. He is giving up an inch of height, an inch of reach. But I do like that Robertson's the southpaw. He did enjoy facing another southpaw so he could land those outside kicks. So
those outside kicks are brutal, and he never gets a chance to throw. What fight was that they were, yeah, the commentators were Kopolev highlighting that?
Kopolev.
Yes. And he looked, but, and that was, yeah, one of his best performances.
It gets interesting because I want to know how high level a grappler Allen is, because when I look at his fights, it's actually, you know, him that gets taken down more so than him actually landing the takedowns. So if Robertson tells himself that he's not going to initiate the grappling unless he's getting, you know, going for that guillotine he loves, he could actually have a little bit of success here. But all three of his UFC losses were by round one submission. Now look at those names. Marvin Vettori's, you know, in the hunt for the title right now. Glover Teixeira is getting a title shot
up
next
in weight division.
And yeah, and then I think it's, what is it, Cesar Fajeda, not the best fighter, but back in 2018, coming over from Glory Kickboxing, you know, Robertson really faced, you know, his toughest grappling threat to that point. So, okay, really, it looks like, you know, if you're going to be on the Allen side, you really might be looking at the round one submission, and I'm sure you could get a ton of value on it, and that is, if he commits to his wrestling, he should be able to get there. It just makes me pause a little bit because, yeah, I just think that Robertson isn't going to get overwhelmed by Allen's size like some of his opponents have in the past. And it makes me not want to necessarily play a side heavy here, because I think both these guys coming off of, you know, a couple losses, especially, you know, finishes, we could see a little bit of a weird fight, especially in the big octagon.
This is a fight for me that is 1,000% weigh-in dependent. Carl Robertson had trouble making weight against Vettori not once but twice. I'm not sure if it was training camp. I'm not sure if it was COVID related. I don't know what happened. I'm pretty sure it was one of those two, if not a mixture. He misses weight the first time, fight gets canceled. They have that whole scrap backstage where it makes Robertson look like a bitch. They then fight again maybe a week or two later, and I remember texting TB. I'm like, you're not going to believe it. He missed weight again. So, and then he comes out and gets completely mollywopped. He just gets smacked around by Vettori. And we've seen how good Vittori's grappling is and how, you know, crazy his ground and pound is. Like, okay, he gets a pass. And then again, like you just said, Glover Teixeira, title contender, up a weight division. Problem with Robertson is that he's a natural 205er, right? I mean, you look back at his kickboxing career and stuff like that. He really is better suited at a higher weight class. So maybe that's why we haven't seen the best of him. So I'm going to be looking at the weigh-in. So I'm very happy to be the intermediary between you two on opposite sides.
Okay, moving right along here. Dwight Grant coming in versus someone coming off of a nice fat USADA suspension, Stefan Sekulic. It was a little bit tough to go back and get into the tape, especially, you know, from a fight that was a little while ago and, you know, trying to figure out how it's going to play out. But, yeah, so this fight, we're looking at the welterweight division now. And Dwight Grant coming in as a big favorite here.
Too big of a favorite.
maybe a prohibitive favorite. Minus 225 as well, just like Sabatini. And plus 188 on the comeback for Sekulic, just like Connolly. So, and we're looking at, you know, kind of a matchup like we just talked about. A little bit of a, you know, someone that's looking to get a little bit more of the grappling in versus someone that is a little bit more comfortable at range.
fight to go the distance plus 150. That's it. Mic drop. Boom.
Yeah. So, like, I have a little bit of a different, like, basically that angle. Grant, you know, just, you saw with the Zach, like, you know, has some moments, burst offense where he looks super awesome. But, I mean, you saw in his Yusuf debut against Zach Otto.
Low volume.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's just moments where for a second I was just like, oh yeah, don't turn my mic up. But I was like, no, okay, just there are moments where he just doesn't do a ton. The Daniel Rodriguez fight, at least they threw down, but I don't know how much of that was Rodriguez forcing them to push the pace versus.
Hey, Chris Hione said he wasn't dead, so he wasn't dead. That's it.
But you know, I just mean in terms of just like, hey, you know, actually, like, hey, Grant actually, you know, did stuff. Like through heat for 4 minutes. So it's like, hey, if that Drake Grant shows up, then he just smokes.
He was gassed though. He was so exhausted after he completely didn't get the finish in those first 2 minutes. His arms were tired. His mouth was wide open. And any punch that hit him in the face was going to put him down.
Yeah. But also, this is Stefan Sekulic, who is like, as about as just a dude as anyone is on the UFC roster.
Yes.
But like, no, I mean, he's like, it's good that like you have, you know, no noticeable weaknesses, but it's like, you're just a dude. So actually, like I did put a note like Sekulic by decision at plus 420. Cause like,
I have that written as well.
Yeah. He does look pretty durable. So it's like, hey, if Dwight Grant just decides not to do anything, like Dwight Grant could just win a decision still by hitting like, you know, the biggest punch of every minute of the fight. But Grant
decision is plus 330. This just has greasy judges bullshit written all over it. Parlay buster written all over it. I like the over 2.5 or fight to go the distance. Like you're
Listen, coming off a suspension, coming off that juice, are you getting Georges Danhoe vibes here? I think this is a parlay killer.
Oh my god.
Ultimately, listen, I'm sure I might end up making a degenerate play here at some point, but this fight, the line that it's priced at, and just, you know, how can you know where these guys are at specifically? I got to stay away from this one.
Moving right along.
Yeah, nice and easy. So here we get into a really interesting fight. This is the second booking for Alex Cowboy Oliveira and Randy Brown. This fight going to be taking place in the welterweight division. And the odds right now, once again, a little bit interesting. Oliveira, the veteran, plus 128, and Randy Brown coming off a pretty brutal knockout loss at minus 152. Now, you face Vicente Luque, what can you expect? Brutal things are probably to follow, and you can't really fault Randy Brown for that fight too much because he did show a little bit of toughness early on before he really got worn down. But those legs are just so susceptible to those kicks, man. He's a boxer, heavy on that leg. And Luque just ate him up. I think he got a knockdown with a leg kick, essentially. And, yeah, you know, it's a little bit tough to completely trust either guy here. But Oliveira, to me, when I'm watching him, at least these days, it seems like he's doing a lot to not get hit rather than trying to put the hurt on his opponent. Until a guy like, you know, like Sabato, who's one fight away from retirement, gets a little hurt and, you know, the dog's taken out of him, then Oliveira pours on the pressure as the fight goes on. But I don't really see him setting that pace early, and I think Brown might have his way.
Another fight for me that is completely and utterly way independent. You have no idea what you're getting with Charles Oliveira, a complete wild card. Somebody that, if you told me I'm getting a completely motivated and on weight Charles Oliveira, I'm going to take him at this dog price money line, because while I do think that Brown is the better distance striker and certainly has the length advantage, I think Cowboy's power and overall like ferocity and physicality kind of will drive Brown backwards and not really using his better distance striking, which will make him, you know, more tentative, which is something that we've seen. And, you know, well, Brown doesn't necessarily have any sort of elite takedown defense, and Cowboy, going back to that ferocity, how many takedowns does he get per 15? It's like, it's high. You know, when was the last time Brown has faced somebody with that high of a grappling tendency?
Oliveira lands 2.41 per 15 minutes. I think Brown is actually very tricky when you get on top of him, because his limbs are so long. I think it could be difficult if Oliveira tries to push the grappling pace, and he is probably going to want to do this from distance, but he's given up a lot
of
reach.
The other problem with pushing the pace, especially with grappling, and then we're going to hand it to Tom, is Cowboys' cardio has also been quite suspect. So I think that there's a flyer on Brown sub plus 600. I don't think that that's another terrible sub flyer. But Feely, what do you think, man?
I don't trust either of these guys. Oliveira is an all-timer as far as like from like showing a lot of skill, but from fight to fight, I have no idea. Like, I have no feel for what he's going to bring fight to fight. Sometimes he pressures, sometimes he bullies, sometimes he just is a range striker, sometimes he just doesn't show up at all. Like, sometimes he has knockout power, sometimes he just and then Brown reminds me of like, because so this was the first fight I looked at for this card, and the main event was the last fight I looked at for the last card, Whitaker Gastelum, and Gastelum and Brown, at least in my mind, have the same thing for me in terms of like Gastelum had like the Adesanya performance, and it's like the rest of his career is just like chasing that one best performance of his career. And with Randy Brown, it looked the same thing when it comes to his fight against Brian Barberena, where it was like, okay, this is like what we wanted from you all along. You turn the corner, you're a really sharp range striker, you're just picking this guy off, and it looks really awesome. And then just both before and after that, just the same sort of like, this is all not working as well as it should, and just, you know, just kind of that. Like, even like getting that win over Warley Alves, it was like that was just a complete mess. And then like both guys just doing the wrong thing until Warley Alves did the wrong thing that got him tapped out.
He gassed, and I mean, it was just, that was again another crazy, crazy instance where I'm not sure that like I'm not sure how many times that really happened.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, so it's like I'm kind of shocked that Brown is the favorite, just because I think like the clearest dynamic here to take over a fight is Oliveira just being able to bully Brown down, even though he can't do much. Like, I don't know how much he can do if he gets him there.
What you just said, like, if I could just encapsulate that and put it in my pocket and just hold it. I mean, that's exactly what brought me to Oliveira moneyline way independent, because if I can get him, you know, with no, nothing else attached to it, just him straight up, just go out there and win. And if I could get that at plus money with him looking good, looking very good, I get to decide. Yeah. Otherwise.
Yeah. I mean, I had written down like as a flyer, maybe Oliveira by sub at plus 650, but it was like, even then just kind of like, again, let's all right. Like, you know, everything you say is true, but even if he looks good, it's like he could just walk in the cage and be like, I'm just going to rage kick box with Randy Brown and then go to like a shitty decision that can go either way. And it's like, I had Oliveira, especially like starting like, you know, his UFC debut was like, okay, against Gilbert Burns, like, all right, he's showing some really good striking. And then all of a sudden he's like, you know, like, who was he out wrestling? Like, then he's, you know, out wrestling like James Mutasri and stuff like that. And just fight by fight, you have no idea what he's going to go for. And then like the fight after that, he's getting out wrestled by like Ryan LaFlair. And then all of a sudden he knocks Ryan LaFlair out. So I'm like, okay, round by round, like, you know, fight by fight, I have no idea. Even though this guy has a lot of talent, I have no idea what he brings. And then, you know, then that was even before his stuff was starting, like, you know, him getting hit by like a hand grenade on New Year's Eve and stuff. And it's just like, you know, some of the crazy stuff from his personal life. So it's like, all right, I just have, but then, I have no trust in what he brings to the cage at any moment, basically.
Yeah, so ultimately, it doesn't feel like a fight I'm trying to lay one of my best bets on. And, you know, if anything, yeah, let's see how they look and all that. But Oliveira is not outside of just not showing up.
Just taking the show up. He will take the show money and phone this in. No problem.
Yeah.
Again, how many fights has that Cowboy had canceled? Like a couple now. I really think that he's itching to get in the octagon and actually have a legitimate performance.
Okay. All right. And that's fair, you know, and I'm glad that you have a little bit of a stronger feeling here, you guys, because it is going to be tough to trust either guy. And at that point, yeah, you got to look at the dog odds. So let's get onto our main card here. I think that this fight here might be one of my, best as far as, you know, kind of going against the grain on the line. So we have Anthony Smith coming in versus Jimmy Crute in the light heavyweight division. And Crute's money line is shot up a little bit here because, now we were looking at minus 205. It was at minus 225. I just saw it drop to minus 215. And here we are again, now back down to minus 205. I think once it got a little too wide, people are starting to throw a little something on Anthony Smith here. Smith 9-6 in his UFC career. Crute 4-1, had that kind of embarrassing submission loss to Serkinov, given that he really should have gotten the finish there. And yeah, so I think he had his disappointment. I don't think we're going to see a shit the bed performance from Jimmy Crute. I really think he's just a high level athlete.
I'm not even sure that that's fair to say. I'm not even sure if Jimmy Crute, if he were to go out and not win, or let's say he goes out and gets knocked out in round two or something, which I'm not saying will happen. I'm not sure that it's a shit the bed performance. Anthony Smith is, and that's kind of where the line has maybe been a bit disrespectful. Anthony Smith has been a perennial top 10 guy. He's been in there with the best of the best. And yeah, his stats are pretty awful. And yeah, he's not afraid to lose a fight, but the dude's a warrior. And like I said, he's fought the best of the best. So the biggest knock on Crute, I think that's fairly obvious, is the lack of competition.
Yeah, that's completely fair. I got to give you props on that. But to me, I think my ultimate point is, like, from the UFC perspective, like, they want Crute to win this fight and they want him to put on a good performance because he's the type of guy that they're trying to promote at this point. So to me, yeah, Jimmy Crute goes out there, doesn't win. In the UFC's eyes, yeah, he shit the bed for them because they want to build a name off of Anthony Lionheart Smith here. That's what the UFC wants to do. Yeah, I'm not sure that I see a finish here. A couple guys with a lot of finishes on their record, but we're not seeing them really get plastered early by, you know, striking. I think we've seen, you know, Crute get caught susceptible in the grappling here. And Smith also, you know, you can wear on him and really work him down, but he generally gets outside of the first few rounds and someone that's been in a few main events recently. So to me, you say, wow, okay. You know, if you really think you're heavy on Jimmy Crute here, that's great. And if you want to play the decision, plus 290, that's down from plus 330 earlier in the week. So some people are starting to get the idea, and will the fight go the distance? Now at plus 134, that was at plus 188. People, get on this line.
I think if you like, realistically though, I think if you like Crute, I think you have to like him early, because in my opinion, the only fight we've seen him go late, the Paul Craig fight, he was exhausted in that fight. Very questionable in terms of what kind of pace he'd be able to put on in the third round against, again, Anthony Smith, made lots of main events, former title challenger, and somebody that has throughout his career has kind of shown that he's a slow starter and will get that late finish or will turn it on in the later rounds. So he won't have as much time to maybe do that. But again, if Crute goes out there, maybe hurts Anthony, oh, you know, blah, 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 and you know, he gasses out in the first 3 minutes, or form it, like, it could be a real problem. It could be a long night for Crute and a learning experience. Because yes, I think Crute deserved to step up. I think he took two steps up with this fight. What do you think, Mr. Feely?
Yeah, I'm more on your side. I think when it comes to so Jimmy Crute's one of those guys where it's like it's taken me a while to be like, okay, like you're actually good. Because it's like what I call, like, kind of in my head, the Edmund Shabazian effect, where like Shabazian came in, it's like, okay, like you're managed by Ronda Rousey and stuff like that, and it's like, okay, like, you know, you're gonna get like the easy path basically. But Shabazian, you know, even with his last loss and stuff like that, it wound up being a really good prospect. And like Crute, like if you remember, like on the Contender series, it was like he was sponsored by like Air Asia, like had a big sponsorship thing. They put him against a guy who had lost to like 2018 Matt. They put him against the guy in the Contender series coming off a loss to like 2018 Matt Hamill. So it's like, okay, like they just gave him a layup, you know. He's like just like the most, I forget who said, I'm seeing something else, like the most British looking Australian man ever. Just, you know, he's coming out here, like it doesn't look that great. He's beating a guy who, like, you know, isn't really that good. And it's like, okay, kind of, all right, we're just going to give him the easy path. And then I picked him against both Sam Alvey and Paul Craig, just because I'm like, okay, these are kind of like two veteran trap fights and stuff like that. And he showed me, it's like, okay, you just, you know, you didn't dive right into getting knocked out by Sam Alvey. You didn't dive right into getting tapped out by Paul Craig. That's like, you know, your first level of, all right, maybe I need to take you seriously. And then he had the Serkinov loss, but then his last two fights, he was pretty smart as far as just like, okay, you know, he's decent everywhere. He has those tools. He's just going to be super aggressive with using all of them. So I'm like, okay, Jimmy Crute's pretty good. How good? We don't really know yet.
I think
on the other side, Anthony,
I think that I was about to say, no, I think exactly what you're saying. I think the Johnny Walker fight was maybe the more proper step up in competition.
Yes. I agreed on that. Definitely. Yeah. Agree, especially with the whole like trap aspect of it. Cause Smith is someone where it's like, his success, at least in my mind, it's like, you know, he can do a lot of stuff. And, you know, obviously he's done really well to get here where he is. But
and he got a nice cushy like, job as a commentator, which yeah, I think he's, by the way, it's so interesting to see his hand tattoo all up on the desk, which, by the way, I don't even care. I think he's fantastic, which probably he has no, like, public speaking background. I don't know what his background is, but he is so good in front of the mic.
Yeah, because one of the regional, actually the Jeff Molina fights that I listened to, I was like, who is this? Pretty good. And I was like trying to place the voice, and it was Anthony Smith. So yeah, definitely. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if. And I hear like also Kiesa's doing really well from LFA and stuff like that. So it's like even more, you know, good. They have more good commentators. They know what to do with because I like all the guys. You know, they have already Rogan aside, but that's all the thing. So Smith is a guy at least like a lot of his. Wins are defined more by like his opponent's weaknesses rather than anything he does. Cause I like, you know, the Rashad Evans, Shogun Hua wins, and like Devin Clark in his last fight. It's like, okay, he just like sparked out these guys who were either older or like in Devin Clark's case, just like not particularly that good, you know, to begin with. And yeah, I mean, especially like Clark's like, you know, a chinny defensive, like, you know, Smith, Clark's all right, but you know, defensive. Open chinny, you know, just the guy that was tailor made to lose Roy to Smith. And then there's also the guys who got tired, like Uzdemir, Gustafsson, and everything. And
right.
You know, I think Crute's above the level where Smith's not going to spark him out, but then it goes down to what you said, where it's like, you know, all right, I figure Smith doesn't, you know, spark him out early. Crute now is like, okay, I'm just going to go after my wrestling super early, which guys like Rocket showed that, you know, hey, you can do that on Smith early or, you know, Glover late. And the question is like, does Jimmy Recruit get tired by the end of round three and become one of those guys that gets knocked out? Or does he just like grind out the decision and finish the job? And like, I think it's going to be Crute's win, but you know, where everything is odds wise, it's like, all right, I'm not going to.
Yeah.
So well said, Mr. Feely. So well said, which is why my bet is going to be a parlay. And we'll talk about the next leg in the next fight. Parlay over 1.5 -180. Chalky, I know. But I'm done like trying to play fortune teller. I want to take our best thoughts and find a spot. I think this fight goes over 1.5. I don't think Smith goes out there and gets starched or gets choked out super quickly. And I would say the same thing for Crute. I don't think he gets starched super quickly. I don't think he gets chucked out super quickly. I don't think that's how this fight goes. I think they'll both have a level of respect for each other. And I think it's going to take some time to get cooking.
Yeah, that's completely fair. I really like that line of thought. My official play will end up being a fight goes the distance. We'll see where the line settles up by the time I actually play it. So make sure you follow us over. It was at +133, but there are some boosts out there that I might be using. Maybe go on DraftKings, see if their line's a little different. You know, they got that 26%, three of them. If there's a play you really like, make sure you use that. Make sure you follow us. I'm at TB Scouting MMA at @the_MMA Guru. OMG, it's Feely. Make sure if you want to see our final thoughts where we end up that you're following us all because we do like posting some stuff as the fights come up too, just in case. So. Yeah, especially to see the final lines and stuff. But yeah, so it sounds like, you know, we kind of expect Crute to get the job done, but not enough to trust him, especially at over -200. So let's get to the next fight. This one should be really interesting once again, as far as
the rematch 11 years in the making.
Yeah. Well, how is this one going to play out? And yeah, you look at the tape, you could probably get a good clue of what each guy's trying to do. Uriah Hall versus Chris Weidman in the middleweight division. This fight opened up dead even. Don't blame him for that. But the public, well, you know, just the betting public in general, not trying to call anybody anything here. But we got Weidman now at -124 and Uriah Hall at +106. So it seems like people have found a side. Money's starting to come in more on Weidman. And it definitely makes sense because if you look at the different ways that someone could win a fight, I would say two out of the three ways are clearly in Weidman's favor as far as working towards a decision with volume as far as grappling goes, or, you know, maybe even being able to lock in a surprise submission here. But you can't discount Uriah Hall, the power he brings. And, you know, the narrative is Weidman's chin. So be wary because if you're going to play Hall by knockout, it's going to be low volume and you're going to be sitting there waiting, getting really angry when he doesn't pull the trigger. He lost the first two rounds to Anderson Silva, and I'll leave it at that. So to me, it's going to be really tough for me to pick a side here, but I think it's just so crazy to keep on hearing, oh, the narrative of Weidman's chin, Weidman this, Weidman that. I think he could get hurt in this fight, but I just feel like I've heard way too many people say it to feel comfortable that Weidman's getting knocked out. So like, if you're like, if Hall could somehow sting him a little bit and maybe win a couple rounds, you don't feel comfortable. I don't know. Does this fight maybe go the distance?
That's I'll just quickly jump in. I'll say, yeah, I think that's probably where it goes. The problem with Uriah Hall is, you just said so eloquently, his output. His output is extremely low. You know, a guy coming off tough, the Ultimate Fighter. He had the world in the palm of his hands. Everybody thought he's going to be the next Anderson Silva. I mean, we've heard this story a million times, and then he never really panned out to be. You know, the whether it's the mental stuff and all those things that make it extremely difficult for Uriah Hall to really come to fruition as the fighter that he was supposed to be. He moves to Fortis MMA, maybe finds somebody that can help him in Saif Saud. Looked good against Anderson Silva when, that being said, at times it almost looked like he was still the old, you know, dejected, not really focused. And then, you know, Saud would, you know, snap him back into place, and then he would start the round a little bit more focused. You know, there were times in that Silva fight where Silva looked like he was maybe could win, especially as he won the first two rounds. As that third round is closing, Silva kind of maybe gets tired or lazy, and he gets just completely rocked, and the fight was over from there. I think, generally speaking, and this is something that I've now learned over the last year or so of betting publicly, you have to, the narrative to fade is the chin narrative. It's shout out to Numbers MMA. It is one of the, it's the most overrated, because it's the one the public overreacts to the most. So I absolutely hate Chris Weidman. He is one of my least favorite fighters. Listen, Chris, you end up being a fan of the show. Shout out, man. We can get a beer and talk about it. But you're one of my least favorite fighters, man. I love Jacques Garay. You know, they're just one of my least favorite people of all time. That being said, I still find myself possibly placing a bet on Chris Weidman here. I think the narrative of Chris's chin is weaker than the actual truth behind Hall's lack of striking. Mr. Feely, we've kept you waiting.
I mean, you've touched on a lot of this stuff. Like, I literally have my first note is Weidman's chin question mark, where it is. First of all, I need to say, as a Long Islander, even though I don't always agree with Chris Weidman, I have to support him. I'll always be my boy.
Oh, no.
And, yeah, douche. I'm not good. don't get me started on Long Island.
He's not got that Long Island attitude. I get it. He's a cool guy. I really like Matt Sauer a lot, too. And some people think he's a douche, so.
Matt Sauer is, anyway. Matt Sauer is wonderful. So, oh, I love Matt Sauer. So there's a lot to, because it's like, how much do you trust either guy? The chin thing. So the funny thing, first of all, is too, it's like, if Chris Weidman's chin is actually pretty decent, like, I actually do think he's kind of an interesting matchup for Adesanya, just because with the size and the wrestling. Even though I think Adesanya would still probably fuck him up, I'm like, okay, I can actually kind of see, like, you know, you have to go down the list. Anyway, but yeah, so like Weidman's chin, as a general rule, just with fights like this, it's like, if there's a guy who wins until he loses and the guy who loses until he wins, I'm going to pick the guy who loses until he wins, just because those line up. So I'm picking Hall here, and like, if Hall wins, it'll almost have to be by knockout. Like with Weidman's chin, so, I mean, he had the string of losses, but the thing was, you know, he would get rocked and he would, like, you know, things would go downhill, but it would take things to go downhill for a while to put him out. And then he moved to 205 and then it was absolutely smoked by Reyes. That was like the first, like, one punch of the fight knockout. And it's like, okay. So actually going into the Akhmedov fight, I actually picked Akhmedov by first round knockout. Just thinking like, okay, I am out. Like, there is a point with some fighters where I am just out on you. Fade. No. And even though Akhmedov, like, even though as Akhmedov kind of learned to pace himself, the finish has dried up, but in the past he had finished people very quickly, so I was like, okay, maybe he can do that. And instead it was just like a mess of a wrestling match, and Weidman won two rounds out of three, and, you know, let's all move on with their lives. So the question is, you know, if I had to rank, like, okay, the hardest hitter is that, you know, Weidman's faced since basically he lost the title. You know, Reyes is probably number one, but Hall's number two on that list, probably. So is Weidman durable enough? Is, you know,
I don't
know. Does it take a level?
Does Hall hit harder than Yoel? I guess based on technical knockouts.
You're right. You're well. Wasn't thinking. Yeah. Okay. So yeah. All right. But same kind of thought where it's like, okay, you know, kind of, you know, even though I think Yoel does a lot more intentionally than Uriah Hall does, where it's like, okay, you know, when that knockout shot comes in the second or third round, is Weidman's chin still at the point where, like, you know, is it going to take the one shot to knock him out? And I don't know. And then, so that's on the Weidman side of my questions. And then the Hall side, you know, as everyone brings up, it's okay, you know, when does he actually decide to throw? Like, because it's always been something where it's like you kind of have to press the action and piss him off to get him to actually do something. I did think against Antonio Carlos Jr., he looked a lot better under Fortis, that he was like, okay, you know, he was fighting the takedowns better than he had. He was actually like trying to like press the action during the times that, you know, the fight was standing and won the decision because of it, you know. And then from that reason, it's like, how much was, like, Carlos, as soon as the shoe faced, as soon as the fight started, you know, he got to the takedown, started setting the pace and stuff like that. So how much of that was Uriah Hall matching the pace? Because I think, okay, there's a thing where if Weidman starts pressing that pace, you know, is Hall going to throw? And then, you know, from there it was like, because I was actually pretty high on Hall going into the Silva fight, thinking like, hey, you know I've said this a million times before, but maybe Hall actually finally turned a corner. And then, you know, Silva fight happens, same old Hall. But then, you know, circling back, how much do you, you know, how much do you carry that going forward? Is it Hall has actually mentally turned a corner and it's just, you know, he fought his idol Anderson Silva and went back to the Uriah Hall for one fight and now he's going to like kick Chris Lima's head off? Or how much of it was he had one pretty good performance against Antonio Carlos Jr. and now
I'm not even sure that that was that, like, again, maybe that was his first fight with Fortis and it's a split decision. And I'm not sure that, like, he didn't look great.
But, like, you know, if, like, yeah.
And then,
like,
and then
you
for
know,
the troubles, Antonio Carlos Jr. is no longer with the promotion. Now fighting in
Antonio
PFL
Carlos
next
Jr.
week.
I think Shoe Face is pretty good. But I'm also like, does 2016 Uriah Hall win that fight? Mm. Probably not, you know?
That's fair. Like, so it's good relative. To talk about progression.
And again, how much...
He has certainly progressed. And going to Fortis absolutely was best for his career. If Weidman gets starched in round one, it's retirement time.
He's been working a little bit too much with Wonderboy. I think in the last fight against Akhmedov, like, he was keeping those hands a little too low for my liking.
Which I had said in the last fight, I do have a parlay. The parlay was over 1.5 Smith and Crute and over 1.5 Hall and Weidman.
Ooh, okay. I think that's a big play.
I'm thinking, like, Weidman probably, like, you know, wins the first round on wrestling and then question mark.
I don't think that if Hall gets the knockout, I don't think that it's coming super early. And I think Weidman's most likely path to victory is decision. So I'm taking over 1.5 on both of them, parlayed at +128.
Yeah. I'm just wondering if those, like, you know, if. Yeah, I mean, from your, like, not about your parlay, but just in general about the fight, like, okay, you know, even if Hall, like, even if Weidman's chin is still, you know, like, Reyes is the only guy who can crack it with one shot.
Yeah, listen, there's not that much to discuss. I mean, is Hall by knockout because Weidman's chin is fucked, or it's Weidman by decision because Hall doesn't throw anything. Next fight.
Yeah. Pretty simple. Hey, so let's get down to some championships. we got three consecutive title fights here. We got, to start us off, in the flyweight division, Valentina Bullet Shevchenko versus Jessica Bateasteca Andrade. And I think I found myself... Okay, I got to admit some bias here. Jessica Andrade might be one of my favorite women's UFC fighters just because, like, as far as someone who brings, like, the excitement to a fight, isn't she everything that you would want to see in the women's division as far as, like, finishes, pressure, power, you know, and she's got the black belt and the wrestling to back it up. And anyways, my biases aside, I got to put that out there because you guys are going to laugh at me. The line right now is -390 Shevchenko, +310 Andrade. It should be closer.
Yep. I think so. I think that's fair. I think it can be closer. I think that Jennifer Maia exposed a very specific path of weakness. And I think that if Andrade fights her absolute best, she could possibly expose that.
Yeah. So to me, I see this being, I really didn't like how Shevchenko reacted to the physicality of Maya in the clinch. That really opened my eyes. I'm sitting there holding a parlay with Shevchenko and sweating my balls off in the second round because she initiates the clinch and Maya gets her, turns her around and is holding her up against the cage. And Shevchenko thinks, all right, I'm just going to get her with a trip. She comes off the cage, goes to throw the trip, and then she's the one falling on her ass and getting controlled for the next 3-4 minutes of the round. And to me, what I see there is Shevchenko, freaking out or anything. She looked a little nervous there. And I know I was nervous about how the rest of that fight was about to go and play out. However, Jennifer Maia never had been in a 5-round, UFC fight before. Jennifer Maia barely was able to make weight for all of her fights leading up to there. And Jennifer Maia, as impressive as she was in that performance, especially in that second round, she's not Jessica Andrade. Andrade is one of, like I said, my bias, one of the most exciting women's fighters out there. And I just think that she could bring a level of physicality, brute toughness. And, I don't think she's going to have a poor weight cut like it was when she flew over to China to defend her belt against Zhang. I think we are going to see a focused, dedicated first face-off. I love the little smirk she had on. Like, I think she knows something. I think she knows she's not going to want to feel that power. And I'm crazy. I'm going to be playing on Josh.
Feely?
So, like, the Maya fight does just make a lot more interesting because, like, the thing, like, Shevchenko's secret weapon, the whole time is, she gets advertised as, the precise kickboxer and stuff, which she is, but on the feet, she can be very slow-paced, and so, Shevchenko's thing is all about, control and precision almost to a fault, I would say. The secret weapon, at the end of the day, what she always wants to do, kind of even going back to her UFC debut against Sarah Kaufman, is to wrestle. She's a really strong wrestler, clinch fighter. And, it was kind of somewhat 50-50, or she could tire herself out or, have to rely on submissions against Juliana Pena at 135. But at 125, it's okay, She can just bully everyone. That was fine. So the Maya fight was the first one where, I picked Shevchenko pretty easily just because I'm like, all right, Maya loves to go with the clinch. No one beats Shevchenko at 125 in the clinch. There you go. And then, over 5 rounds that held out. But, like I said, the second round and, the beginning parts of that Maya fight were just like, okay, this is really crazy to see because the first time, Shevchenko really feels like she's losing control of the fight because, the losses to Nunez and stuff, a lot of it was, she just didn't pull the trigger enough. It wasn't that, she was actively losing. But it's like Andrade is just so, I just have questions about how that's going to work over 5 rounds is the thing. The first thing, there's the striking thing of that it's going to be really interesting because Andrade's going to make Shevchenko work at a pace. But then the same thing is, is there the off chance? I think it would take a round or two for this to happen. I don't think Shevchenko would just immediately knock Andrade out like Zhang did. But I think, if Andrade just kind of forced to chase a little bit and just just has no defense. Yeah, exactly. Basically, if Shevchenko can avoid her or shuck her off, which rather than,
because not only is Shevchenko one of the most technical strikers in the UFC, and I say that fairly confidently, that's not even her best skill. Her best skill is her defense. You can't hit her. She's so good at the defensive striking. When you see Shevchenko, she lands 10% more accurately than her opponents. And that's with the very conservative, picking her shots, only throwing when she wants to throw. Andrade, while throwing twice as many strikes per fight, is only outlanding her opponents by 1%. So all that striking, all that blitzing forward leaves her just as open. Not good. Then you tell me I get 5 rounds with one of the most defensive strikers we've seen since John Jones. And I can have Shevchenko at one of the best prices we've seen her in recent fights. And then you look at what the line is building, what Vegas is building. Vegas has fight to go the distance plus 122. Plus 122 for the fight to go the distance. So what does that mean? Does that mean that Andrade is getting some sort of freak KO? That prop is plus 600. That would be a flash knockout. That would be crazy. To me, what I think I like is Shev by KO plus 200. I think that Shev can get the finish here. We've seen Andrade finished very quickly by Weili Zhang in China. We know that was kind of crazy in 40 seconds. But she's also been finished by Raquel Pennington and Marion Renault, albeit by submission. But she's been finished. And she's also been finished by Liz Carmouche, albeit in 2013.
UFC debut.
But we've seen her lose in the UFC. And we haven't seen her fight somebody like Shevchenko. And kind of what Feely was saying, it makes me kind of think about it. Shevchenko fought and put on incredible fights against Amanda Nunes. Do we think that Jessica Andrade could fight Amanda Nunes? Size-wise, stature-wise, anything-wise? Really? Because my answer is no. They're never making that fight ever. So if that's the case, if A equals B and B equals C, but A doesn't equal... You know, it's like there's something missing. How about 5 inches of reach? Maybe that's what's missing. I'm on Shevchenko here.
On the feet, my concern is I think obviously Shevchenko's going to get the better of things there. My concern is more that she stays evasive and rides out decision rather than, hits that one big head kick, highlight reel knockout. Because I do think Shevchenko is somewhat overrated as a knockout artist just because of her own.
Yes,
I
was actually waiting to get in
her own. Yeah, so the interesting thing to me is, because my one thing that I would even maybe bet on this is just on that Andrade by KO bet it plus, that's because it's plus 600 and that's the only way Andrade is going to win. She's going to win in an instant. So the clinch is the thing that really interests me, because I think even though I think in terms of sheer horsepower, Andrade might have more than Maya, but I'm just thinking in terms of technique and also just the size and the height and everything like that, that Andrade is such a tank. Is she going to be, I think she might have to rely more on just slams and stuff like that, than rather than actually getting overall control. The other really interesting thing that I think it was UTB that brought up on Twitter, talking to Juan Humes, is the body work is that's something where, because the thing is, basically, I always have to come down on Shevchenko here, because the formula is kind of Andrade can only win this in an instant. And another thing that's, Shevchenko's secret weapon is that she appears to be just super durable. I haven't even seen her get close to being rocked ever. Obviously, technically, I don't know how many people are, even in that position, but even at 135, there's really been no sense that she'd get finished at any time. Not to say that Andrade can't drop her on her head or anything, but I'm wondering, let's say Shevchenko doesn't get that knockout and just Andrade at least makes her work over, three or four rounds, something like that. Could she just lay in enough body work that either she can turn the tide or, hit one big hit to the liver or something like that as a great equalizer. So I don't think, it's going to be a clean knockout. I'd be surprised if, Andrade could pick her up and slam her. I don't think there's really much chance of a submission on either side. I don't think Andrade by, knockout's particularly likely or anything like that. But, some good body work at plus 600 odds, that might be worth throwing something down on.
Like you said about Shevchenko and the power, the only real knockout she got off of a single strike was Jessica Ai in the UFC. The other one is Chookagian, where she gets three takedowns and just ends up crucifix and, finishing her out by the third round. But I mean,
I just thought it was interesting in terms of what Vegas seemed to be tipping their hand towards. I actually do have another parlay here, I think, that I really like. So it's Shevchenko by KO or decision. It's one of those double chances. So it's Shevchenko by KO or decision, and it's parlayed to the next.
All right. And hey, I'm not putting down $50 or $100 or anything crazy here, but hey, maybe $10-$20 on Andrade. Just taking a little flyer here, and I'm going to have some fun. I'm admitting, one of my favorite fighters. So let's see how it goes. Let's get on. Yeah. Second title fight. We got Zhang Weili versus Rose Namajunas. Strawweight division. And I got a little feeling here that something might happen if we see Shevchenko and Zhang Weili both win their fights. But I guess we'll visit that as we go on. But yeah, so this fight, pretty interesting as far as the line goes. Weili just keeps on getting bigger favorite. But I hear a lot of people on the Rose side. Weili -210, Rose +176. It opened up much tighter than that. We were, you know, about -170 at one point, I think. But so for me, the things that really stand out about this fight are that I'm not sure either can really rely on their comfort zone. So it comes down to physical abilities and the willingness to dig in. So take from that as you will, as where you think I might be leaning on this fight. But let me toss it over, see where you guys are at first.
I'll just say simply and quite quickly, my parlay, Shevchenko KO or decision, is parlayed to Zhang moneyline +108. I think that might be one of my favorite plays of the day. I don't really see how Rose gets it done. I mean, she had the best performances of her life against Joanna Jędrzejczyk. And even still, we've seen Joanna look better. And we've seen Weili Zhang look even better than that. I don't know if that's like, that sounds super casual of me to say, but I don't know. I don't see where Rose gets it done.
So I think like, so the interesting thing here is like, so even like as strawweight champion, like basically we have like one fight of Nong's to go on as an, at like an elite level, just because they kind of, you know, she's obviously an elite strawweight from the moment she was in the UFC, but you know, they fast tracked her to the title pretty quick, you know, to the title pretty quickly for the Chinese market. And you know, so like as far as her high level relevant fights, like Tisha Torres is always hard to kind of parse out because Tisha Torres is 5 foot, you know, 5 foot nothing. You know, Andrade, that fight lasted less than a minute, and then it was like, okay, you know, she proved a lot of things, that she can go five rounds like in a war and everything against Joanna. So that was a lot of positives. But I don't think she's fought anyone as dangerous as Rose Namajunas can be, especially starting out. The Andrade fights basically tell the story of like Rose's career. Just, you know, starting out super sharp, you know, the first round of that, for the first few minutes of that first fight against Andrade,
she was incredible.
Yeah, just rifling the speed, range. Fight.
She's lights out for the first 7 or 8 minutes, and then
because I mean, even going back to, I always think of her fight against Karolina Kowalkiewicz in 2016, I believe it was 15 or. Yeah, so because the whole thing is like the thing with Rose is that, you know, she has the length and everything. That's a really good range finder, range fighter. But, you know, when she gets in trouble, she looks to clinch up because she came up as mostly a submission grappler. She gets into trouble and she looks for the clinch. And Kowalkiewicz is a really strong clinch fighter. So Rose would be doing pretty well. Kowalkiewicz would freak her out a little bit and she would just get in for the clinch and Kowalkiewicz would just overpower her. And she was able to get away with that like a little bit against Joanna. And you can even see like in the second fight, between them, like, you know, Rose would still have to kind of like go to the clinch and catch herself sometimes, trying to pressure a little bit. And then, you know, you saw that too with the Andrade fights, where she looked at really, really sharp and then just started to slow down. Really, it was Andrade pushing those exchanges. So basically, what I read is like, you know, within the first two rounds, I think Rose, you know, and Zhang, we saw for better or for worse in the Joanna fight, you know, she's super, Zhang is super hittable. I think in like those first round or two, you know, Rose is going to be able to tee off on her, but then Zhang, you know, looks pretty durable, has like, you know, is both willing to pressure and is a fucking tank of an athlete.
Yeah.
And just, I think over time, you know, it's going to wear on, you know, like she's going to, you know, wear on, wear Namajunas down, wear Rose
if
down.
If that second just, Jessica, you know, Andrade fight was five rounds, like it was scheduled to be.
Exactly.
I have a very hard time believing she was going to win that fight.
Or if she does, she could coast, you know, like coast to a split decision win, I could say. But other than that,
she was lucky to get the split decision win as it was.
Yeah. Let's see, you're getting the, because I don't have a confident read as far as like, you know, I'm not basically the only bet I have, like, even thinking of would be Rose. I was surprised to see Rose via submission at plus 700, just because I think if she can clip Zhang a lot early, I think a club and sub is
if that happens, like, the world will be on fire.
But hey, at plus 700,
I can see.
I mean, that's crazy. I love it. I mean, I'm just thinking of, like, the whole Twitter space just completely melting, erupting.
Because I don't think she gives she'll one if she gets off to a hot start. I don't think she'll one shot KO Zhang, and then, like, Rose is showing, like, if someone's in trouble, she will just hop on that neck and go for it. And it's like, I could see that, you know, versus, like, the other things in the odds. I would take Zhang by decision, but it's like, I do like, you know, the Zhang money line, unless it's parlayed to me. Like, the
Zhang has a couple arm bars on her, a couple submissions on there, guillotines. It's not like she's a complete scrub on the ground, it looks like.
Oh, yeah. I'm just thinking, like, it's like, you know, that all goes out the window if you're, like, you know, if your equilibrium is out the window.
Ultimately, like, see this playing out, like Feely saying, you know, early we might see Rose control the distance with the movement and everything, but Zhang is not afraid to mix it up as far as where she's landing her strikes. So as far to the legs, to the body, you know, she's a little bit of a headhunter at times, and she could run into trouble on some counters when she starts throwing those barrages. And, you know, so it makes me a little nervous as far as being like, oh, picking a specific thing. But Guru, you pointed out to me earlier, I'm stealing your play because it doesn't sound like you really wanted it that bad at this point. Plus 110, Zhang Weili, rounds 4, 5, or decision. That's where I'm feeling, because I think as this fight turns around, that's where the momentum builds. You get plus money. That might be the biggest play for me.
I do like that. I do like that a lot.
That's definitely one of my favorites. And I think, honestly, I think you could, if you really like Zhang, I think you could end up parlaying that to Usman money line, since you already got it at plus money. I think that's a little crazy, but, like, I just don't see, as we're going to get into it, I don't see how Masvidal wins. So if you take Usman at minus 400 or whatever it is, and you want to parlay it to Zhang, or, you know, that was the other thing I had. I have a and still parlay plus 129, all the three to retain.
So I guess that's a perfect transition, because it sounds like we're all in pretty good agreement on the co-main event. Let's get to the main event. And you know what? Actually, I'm not as excited for this one as the previous two fights. let me pull it back a little bit. But yeah, okay. So we got the welterweight division. Second time, Kamaru Usman, Jorge Masvidal. The line, absolutely ridiculous. But that's what happens when you get a 50-45 in the first fight. Minus 400, plus 300. I don't really see anything that tells me otherwise.
I think it was a 50-43.
Yeah, and listen, whatever it was, to me, you heard Usman when he first is calling out Masvidal, saying that he needs to finish the job this time and he wants to get a finish. I'm like, we're getting Usman by finish. We're getting it. And then all of a sudden, God. I'm like, all right. Now we're at the press conference today, and Usman's like, yeah, the finish is not what it's about. It's about taking the spirit out of him, or, you know, making him give up or whatever. And, like, damn, man, why would this play out any different than the last time? Masvidal's got a little more gas in the tank. Maybe he takes a round. Maybe he's more willing to extend his exchanges. But when has Masvidal ever given us 5 good rounds, let alone 3?
Yeah, debatable.
So I mean, it's pretty straightforward. I'll just say it straight up. I'm gonna parlay out Usman. I was starting to get a little nervous. I was like, oh, what if Masvidal wins? Like, I can't play like that. We're talking about Usman here. He's not getting flash KO'd. He's not Darren Till cutting way too much weight going down, and he's not going to get flying kneed. I don't see Masvidal with any real knockouts recently on his resume. He's not scooping the neck, and he's not winning a decision. So just parlay Usman. Probably going to put him with Zhang and do the boost.
People want to talk about how Usman was rocked against Burns in the last fight. Go rewatch that. I don't know. Listen, I'm sure he got clipped a little bit, and I'm not sure he was, you know, expecting that. I hit him right square on the chin, but I don't know. It looks like he slipped a little bit. Like I've said to my buddy TB, a lot of the times it's not the shots that rock you that prove something. It's your ability to recover and come back that actually shows something. And his ability to, rocked or not, recover, go championship mode, and finish the fuck out of Gilbert Burns. Nobody disrespects Burns like that. You know, who actually fights Burns like that? I mean, he brutalized him.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's pretty straightforward, right?
Yeah. This might be one of our shortest of the card to break
Feely,
down.
Please, take us away.
Like, part of me was just like, you know, we saw the first fight. And, like, the thing about the first fight is, like, in the, you know, in the major outlines of things, it basically looked like you would expect it to look, where Usman's going to be controlling this. You know, Masvidal, even though he has gotten better about, in his bursts of offense, going for that finish, you know, he's still a guy who's willing to just kind of cede control of the fight and just rely on a few big moments. I think, you know, those big moments are going to be a little bit sharper just with a full camp than they were in the first fight, but it's still a pretty low percentage chance. Yeah, you know, just it's just kind of, yeah, we saw it, you know. I do think the fact that, you know, I think even coming up as a prospect, the whole thing of, like, you know, Usman's an uncomfortable striker can be knocked out was kind of overrated. It was a little bit kind of the Khabib thing of, like, hey, if you need to find a way to beat this guy, this is what we can come up with. I do think the fact that, you know, the Burns, you know, first round being what it was, always brought a little bit more drama, like, you know, maybe brought a little more drama to that fight, you know, this fight, just as far as, like, hey, you know, hey, you can get rocked a little bit, and Masvidal has, like, a little bit more finishing instinct than Burns, but not anything I would pick. I was surprised Usman, just by a decision straight up, was as low as minus 130. I mean, this is just like...
You got a plus money last time, right?
But still, I mean, come on, minus 130 right now?
Like... I mean, because, I mean, like, you know, I mean, Masvidal was excellent on the ground. So it's like...
And again, and I don't trust it because I don't know. I just, there's something in my gut that says that it might not play out the exact same, you know, what was it? The other fight, and this is totally different. What was it? The other fight? It was the Bellator fight recently. Pitbull. Emmanuel Sanchez, and everybody, including me, thought it was going to play out very similarly, and then boom, choked him out round.
Yeah, this one's like, playing out so like, close.
And again,
to
and
the
that's Bellator, like, and that's Pitbull, and Sanchez is not Masvidal. You know what I mean? And it's like comparing apples to really weird, shitty oranges. But it's still it gives me some weird feeling. So if the whole play on Usman is chalky anyway, so. You might as well, from if my thought process, if you like decision, you might as well go like the Welly Zhang thought. Round four, yeah, five, yeah, or decision, minus 175.
Yeah, but I was still shocked it was that low because I'm just like, okay, you know, might as well like survive three rounds with Damian Maia. You know, he's like a super good grappler. And it's like, I don't think Usman's going to come around and knock him out. And it's like, I think if Usman fucks around and strikes with him, that's, you know, like, I think Usman's the, you know, the GSP thing of like, you know, just take the smartest path to victory, which is going to be wrestling. Yeah,
and just decision him off, be super boring.
Yeah, control, don't fuck around.
So I had another, I had a stupid chalk parlay that I had found. I don't even think I like this one. But it was, I'm parlayed all over the place. It was just a, I mean, it's okay. Listen, all the fight, listen, if you like the bets, you like the bets. I mean, I had the over 1.5 Crute Smith parlayed to this fight to start round three plus 101. So, like, again, if you like the over 1.5 in that Crute fight, that should be locked already. And this fight to start round three, over two rounds, that should be fucking cake. So at plus 101. It was just a thought. But again, you could play that fight to start round three with Welly. You could play that fight to start round three with with Shevchenko. I mean, there's just a bunch of different... Honestly, the rest of the card is completely batshit otherwise. Yeah. But
so
yeah.
I guess that brings us to a clear chance to just kind of wrap it up here. Feels like we were...
A long one this time, but
yeah,
a good one.
Very happy to have a special esteemed guest on today, Mr. Feely. So happy you could join us. This worked out beautifully. Just like a quick rundown.
Yeah, Mr. Feely, why don't you plug your Twitter handle or any other social media?
Yeah. So yeah, Twitter, OMG, it's Feely. Just kind of retweet all sorts of crazy stuff and talk a lot of MMA, you know, as I'm studying tape. Link all my articles at SureDog.com. Go read the archive, learn something. Yeah, that's about all I got going on. So yeah, just plug in and yeah, sometimes I'll break some I'll go through the UFC website and break some releases or break some fights and TV listings and stuff. So just yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, thanks so much for being part of the Chronic Conversation family. And we'd be happy, I'm sure. I'll speak for myself. I'm Tyler. I'm sure we'd be happy have him back at some point or another. Sure. I think he did a fantastic job for somebody that admittedly said that they're not really a big better or open to, you know, much betting. So I think you did a fantastic job of kind of.
I'm open to it. I'm not open to it because I'm not good at it. So that's why, that's my disclaimer. Just disregard everything.
Right. But that's all right. We had a nice breakdown. I mean, as far as like plays real quick for you guys, Sabatini sub for me is a prop I'm playing. Smith Crew to go the distance. That's another prop I'm playing. A couple long shots as far as those go, but we'll see how they play out. We're going to end up parlaying Usman and Zhang, and I'm going to play Andrade on a long shot here. And, you know, maybe as another underdog, we'll look at Natividad, but, keep it really light and definitely not go heavy there.
Yeah. Listen, I've got my few parlays out there. You got the Usman round 4-5 decision. You got Welly Zhang round 4-5 decision. You got Welly Zhang money line parlayed with Shevchenko KO or decision. You got the over 1.5 Weidman parlayed with the over 1.5 Crute Smith. You know, that's probably all of them. And, you know, I'm way independent waiting on Oliveira, way in waiting on Robertson, Sabatini maybe. Okay. That's plenty of freaking bets. That's plenty of sides.
Yeah, that's it. And I forgot to say my biggest bet of the day was Zhang, 4-5 decision, plus 110. Going to throw the hammer on that one with a boost on DraftKings. So if you got it, go get it. And why don't you go ahead and take us away?
Thank you guys and gals so much for tuning in. Please make sure you subscribe to our YouTube channel at Chronic Combat Conversations. Throw our videos a like and share them with your friends. That's the way that we get around. Like and share, please. Check us out on Apple and Google Podcasts. Subscribe and give us a 5-star rating. That way, whenever we release a podcast, it goes straight to you. We are now officially up on Spotify. So if you're a Spotify user as opposed to, you know, Apple or Google, go check us out on Spotify at Chronic Combat Conversations. You can follow us on Twitter at Chronic Combat. You can follow us on Instagram at Chronic Combat Conversations. You can follow my awesome co-host, TB Scouting MMA, on Instagram, Twitter, Verdict, and Tapology. And for the time being, you can find me, the_MMA Guru, on Instagram, Twitter, Verdict, and Tapology. Thank you all so much, and we'll check you for the start of May with Prohashka and Reyes. As long as nothing gets canceled, because man, am I excited for that one.